You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over at Locked On Bears and Locked On Cubs, go give them a subscribe, a follow. Their seasons are just underway like we are. So go give them a follow. They've got a lot of important information. Bears coming off a win. The Cubs battling it out for not only a division, but maybe a potential wild card spot as well.
Yeah, so I'm stressed about the Cubs right now, Jordan. Not going to lie.
You guys took two or three from this weekend, but yeah, that's not...
We can't beat the Pirates, man. We can't beat the Pirates to save our life.
Go follow them, though. You're a Cubs fan. You're a Bears fan. Locked On Cubs, Locked On Bears. They've got your team every day like we do with the Bulls here. So go give them a subscribe. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there with all of your questions, your voicemails. We want to hear from you. Anything from Media Day that jumped out to you guys. You guys got questions. Comments about the upcoming season, we want to hear from you. We've got the first preseason game for the Bulls coming up on Sunday, so we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. So we're back. We're going to be doing part two of our Media Day discussion. So we recorded yesterday, but our media discussion, including all the clips that we wanted to play for you guys on the episode, ran way longer than we thought, so we wanted to give you guys part two today. That'll be following up with Jabari Parker and Wendell Carter Jr.'s conversations with the media on Media Day, as well as we're going to take some questions and voicemails. But before we do that, what's going on, Matt? How you doing? I know you just said you're a little nervous about your Cubbies.
Yeah, all of a sudden that division lead over Milwaukee is down to a half a game after we lost 6-0 to the Bucks last night, and then Milwaukee got a win over the Cardinals. So I am very stressed out. It is a hectic time to be a Chicago sports fan. Tentatively optimistic about these 2-1 Bears, but kind of worried about Mitch Trubisky. Looking forward to another Bears game on Sunday. Very stressed about the Cubs, but really excited for our first preseason Bulls action this weekend. And on top of all that, I'm moving this weekend. So a lot of balls being juggled in my life right now as a sports fan, as someone who has to also switch apartments. So it's going to be a busy week. It's going to be a busy weekend, but I'm here for it, man. Let's talk some Bulls.
Let's do it. Let's get into some of our voicemails. We'll play the second half of our media discussion at the back end of the episode. So we're going to take questions right now, then we'll follow up with the Jabari Parker and Wendell Carter Jr. conversation, as well as audio from what they said at the press conferences in Apple's media day. So that'll be at the back end of the episode. But for now, let's take some voicemails. So the common theme that I want to run through with fans that are listening right now, we've gotten two voicemails about Jimmy Butler, and not just these two, but we've gotten floods of voicemails about Jimmy Butler over the last couple of weeks. And I know some of you have mentioned to us, like, why do you guys keep talking about Butler? Like, it's in the past, blah, blah. Like, the fact of the matter is people care about Jimmy Butler here still. I think you and I, for the most part, still care about Jimmy Butler, and we want to see where he goes. And it's a good topic because of the people associated in Minnesota and what they did here in Chicago. But I feel like once the season starts, the Jimmy Butler saga will kind of come to an end, and maybe that'll come to an end when he finds a trade, when they find a trade partner for him. But we wanted to play these two voicemails back to back because they both make similar points about Butler. So this one coming from Nicholas in Chicago and the other one coming from one of our friends in Columbus, Ohio. So play those back to back and we'll see what our reaction is.
What's up, fellas? You got a lifelong Chicago Bulls fan here. Living in Columbus, Ohio right now. Dad grew up in Chicago. That's how I became a Bulls fan. But I want to first say this, from one podcaster to another, said, you guys, this podcast is great. I love how you're able to keep the content fresh and engaging, even during the off season, which can't be said about a lot of basketball or sports-related podcasts in general. But on to my question. So I just want to ask, can we please finally get rid of this notion that the Bulls got fleeced in this Jimmy Butler trade? I know you guys don't agree with that, but there's still a lot of Bulls fans who still say that, or just basketball fans in general who say that. Like, I think at this point, the Timberwolves would love to have Markkanen and LaVine back, and probably even Chris Dunn with the promise he showed last season. So, you know, I think when the trade actually, when it initially went down, everybody thought that they got fleeced because of Chris Dunn's rookie season and Lauri being an unknown. I mean, at this point now, I think it's just, we just need to get rid of this notion. The Bulls did not get fleeced. If anything, they may have fleeced Minnesota in that trade, especially considering how good Lauri looks like he's going to be. And also, I want to ask you guys this. So that was more of a statement, but the actual question that I want to pose is, depending on, and I know we still need to see how Wendell Carter actually plays and develops, but is it possible in the next 5 years that the Chicago Bulls have the best front court in the league? And if not the best, maybe the most versatile front court in the league, especially if we keep Bobby Portis. Again, thank you guys for the pod. Thank you guys for everything you do for the Bulls community. This is CJ from Ohio. Peace.
What's up, guys? It's Nicholas from Chicago, a regular listener, fan of the show. Just wanted to chime in on this chaos. Oh my God, I can't even believe we're putting up with this, but Jimmy Butler chaos in Minnesota. For the record, for all the listeners, I heard a voicemail say that we lost that trade. We didn't gain anything. For the record, Jimmy Butler was the number 30th pick in 2011. What we got for him was the number 7th pick in Lauri Markkanen, and a top lottery pick in Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. So you got two lottery picks and an athletic finisher for a player that's not even in the top 15. So to call him a superstar is kind of reaching, especially when he's a locker room poison. He's the small man Dwight Howard now because he can't get along with anybody, because if you don't work as hard as Jimmy Butler, you're just not good and you're not champion material. Well, Jim, you kind of broke up the locker room in Chicago, stirred Joe Kim Noah the wrong way, didn't tickle Derrick Rose the right way. Not too many people like you. So to call you a superstar when you haven't won anything past the first round of the playoffs is kind of reaching. So whoever is going to jump on this Jimmy Butler train and call him a superstar and say that we lost and fire Gar Pax, because we know nothing else but to say fire Gar Pax, because who's Gar Foreman in contact? I don't know, but fire him. Fire him. Fire him. It's stupid. Let it go. We won the trade. They're having a meltdown crisis in Minnesota. Same one we had in Chicago. Glad it's not us. Glad we moved on. we have a brand new team. We're trying to move ahead. We're trying to grow our young players, and we're trying to prosper. We're trying to get back up from Derrick Rose's soft feather-like knees. We're getting past Joe Kimno's shoulder issues. We're getting past Jimmy Butler's little crybaby antics in the locker room. Getting past Dwayne Wade's grandfather time in Chicago. We've had so much turmoil and drama in Chicago. It's finally good to get this breakthrough of fresh talent, a fresh start. Let Jimmy Butler go. Can we stop talking about Jimmy Butler already? He's in Minnesota. That's Minnesota's problem. Tom Thibodeau is Minnesota's problem. The Timberwolves, I hate it because we're the Bulls. They're the Timberwolves. Like, they can never be us. Sorry it has to go down this way, but Jimmy Butler, you're not much, bro. Like, it's done. Let it go. We won the trade. Let's move on. The season's here. Basketball's here. I'm excited. I don't know about the playoffs. I don't think we're going to make the playoffs, but if we make the playoffs, hooray. Again, I don't believe in going to the playoffs if we're not championship made because we're not going to benefit anything out of it. But that's just me. Love listening to the show.
Two guys that feel like, and thanks again for calling in, and you can do that at 331-979-1369. Feel like they both made pretty good points about Jimmy Butler, about what he did here in Chicago, what fans feel like now as far as the trade goes. Bring up pretty good points, but I don't want this to turn into now the Jimmy Butler bashing hour. You know what I'm talking about? Because I feel like we spent an extended amount of time talking about him over the last few weeks, and I don't want people that are listening out there that are still Jimmy Butler fans, including myself, to feel like this is the Jimmy Butler bashing hour, because it's really not. But the points that our two callers made, we want to bring those up because that's how a lot of Bulls fans are feeling, and we're getting voicemails on the daily, getting text messages on the daily on how they exactly see this Butler thing kind of unfolding and where they saw it last year and kind of the return that we got from the trade. So your thoughts on both of these voicemails, the points that both of these guys brought up.
Yeah, well, certainly I can understand Nicholas being a little sick of all of the Jimmy Butler talk and the fact that he wants to move on. I feel like he's probably not alone there. The one thing that I would maybe take issue with Nicholas's argument about you can't say the Bulls lost the trade because look at the pieces they got back, and he cited the fact that, you know, Markkanen, number 7 pick, Dunn, number 5, you know, two high-end lottery guys, and then also adding a scorer like Zach LaVine to that mix. To me, it doesn't matter where the pick was. And he mentioned also, like, you know, oh, Jimmy's a former 30th pick. You know, okay, so Jahlil Okafor was the number 3 overall pick. Who wants that guy on the roster right now? To me, it doesn't matter where the guy was drafted. It matters with the player he is today and the potential player he can become as he moves through his NBA career. That being said, I still think because of that reasoning, the Bulls did do well for themselves with the Jimmy Butler trade and getting these three young pieces in Markkanen and Dunn and LaVine. We've talked about that ad nauseum. I understand the sentiment that some Bulls fans are still hung up on Jimmy because he was such a prominent figure here for a few years. And really, he was the franchise's saving grace in the downfall of Derrick Rose. And I feel like he has a soft spot in a lot of Chicago Bulls fans' hearts because of that. But you know, both of these callers are right in saying that, look, Jimmy's not our problem anymore. Tibbs, not our problem anymore. Whatever's going on in Minnesota, we'll keep one eye on it because it's probably going to be entertaining. You know, the latest we've gotten this morning from Mark Stein, among others, is that Jimmy's now preferred trade destination is the Miami Heat, potentially reuniting with his Marquette alum buddy and his former Bulls teammate, briefly, Dwayne Wade, in Dwayne Wade's farewell tour. It could be a circus show. We'll see what happens, and it's an entertaining to watch from afar. But as a Bulls fan, and this is, you know, something that I think Nicholas hit home, it's like, look, you can be excited about this season because whether or not you believe that this is a playoff team in 2018-19 with this young core, wherever you are in the spectrum of how good or bad you think this Bulls team is, it's a fresh start. Yeah, we had to go through a bad tanking season last year. But we now have a young, at the very least, interesting core of talented players. And we just get to see what happens. It is a totally fresh start. You can keep an eye on the entertainment circus of Jimmy Butler and Tibbs and all that's going on. But most of your focus should be on this team and what happens now. Because after all of the drama of the Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo stuff, and the exit of the Rose and Joakim years and all that stuff, clean slate. You're allowed to have whatever opinions you have, but it's a clean slate.
Whether or not you agree that the Timberwolves or the Bulls fleeced one another, I think the main point here is the Timberwolves got what they wanted a year ago. The Bulls got what they wanted this year. And whether or not you want to pair that and make a case for whether they won the trade or lost the trade, like, I can still say that they both got what they wanted. They were both getting what they needed. At the same time, the Bulls can still say in hindsight that they won the trade, that the three pieces were more valuable than the 50-some games that Jimmy Butler played for the Timberwolves. And obviously, a year ago, you didn't foresee Jimmy Butler saying, hey, I want out right before training camp or at the back end of the season this year. So that was something we didn't foresee coming. But at the same time, you can still say 56 games of Jimmy Butler, 58 games of Jimmy Butler, probably not as good as the three guys that you got for Markkanen, Dunn, and Levine. No matter if any of them turn out to be All-Stars or anything of worth, I think right now at this point you can say the Bulls won the trade, but I'm in the camp that I don't need to say that. I like to say it to troll Timberwolves fans, but I don't need to say it in the same time to feel better about the trade, because I liked the trade on draft night when they did that last year. Another point to me too, that I think we're getting a little bit of backlash from Bulls fans that still have love for Jimmy Butler. They feel like we're shitting on him. That's not the point here. That's not exactly what we're doing. My point here is people can change. People can change. Guys can change that come into the league. Their personalities can change, and they aren't the same guy that they were when they came into the league. And personality-wise, too, like, everybody cites Jimmy Butler as being this hard worker, this unbelievable guy coming up with this humble attitude. Yeah, Jimmy Butler was that when he was with the Bulls. But people can change.
Yeah, no, that version of Jimmy Butler left a long time ago.
It's like when you go to college, or you've got some best friends when you leave high school and you go to college, and you've got some acquaintances too and some pretty decent friends. But after that first year, when you come back for that first summer, or even after that second summer, you see some changes in some people, and not everybody that you left from high school that you've got friends with, you're going to stay friends with those people because your views change. Their personalities change a little bit. You kind of open things up. And that's what I always relate it back to, is like seeing some friends or seeing even people in college join groups, join fraternities, sororities. And some of those people change. And that's kind of the way I associate it with Jimmy Butler. It's not the fact that I don't like him or that I hate him or that we're trashing Jimmy Butler here. It's just he's not the guy that he was with the Bulls. And if you can't see that, with everybody else pretty much seeing that, fan base and people around the NBA, like, I don't know what to tell you, but you can appreciate the guy that was here in the first 4 or 5 years, that was that humble guy, that guy that we loved that was drafted 30th overall. Like, you can love that guy and still be in the same camp of understanding that, yeah, Jimmy Butler has changed as a different player.
Yeah, of course he's changed. And look, we did get a little bit of flack for just hating on Jimmy so much in a recent episode. It was like, oh, like, this guy meant so much to your franchise and you guys are trashing him. Okay, well, we're just kind of reading the scenario as it's playing out. And you said, you know, just now, you don't dislike Jimmy, you don't hate Jimmy. I won't go so far as to say that I hate Jimmy Butler now, talking about people changing and opinions changing. But I will certainly, without hesitation, say I don't like the current version of Jimmy Butler. He doesn't seem like a very likable person anymore. All of these reports coming out of Minnesota and the way that he has handled himself and the way that he's handled this situation. And again, there are people on the flip side. So, well, what about Tibbs? He's the stubborn one, refusing to let Jimmy go and refusing to cooperate with other teams. Okay, yes. But the two aren't mutually exclusive. It's not like just because Tibbs is being his usual stubborn self, you cannot also put some fault on Jimmy for being a diva. And that is what he is being. Everything we've heard about how he's handled this and not wanting to show up and not wanting to do this and demanding that and calling out his young teammates once again, creating locker room problems once again. And it's all, oh, if you don't work as hard as I do, then you don't deserve to be in this league and you don't deserve this and you don't deserve my, you know, my respect. Dude, it is classic diva stuff where Jimmy turned into a star and all of a sudden his ego just exploded. Yeah, he and Tibbs are both being stubborn in this situation. But to those staunch Butler defenders here in Chicago who still think it was a mistake to trade him, and even if you're okay with the trade, are saying you guys are being too hard on Jimmy, look, the criticisms that Jimmy has gotten for being a diva over the last couple of years, when you look at the facts and the reporting of what has happened and what he has said and what he has done, is 100% valid and legitimate and deserved. He is a diva, no question.
And I don't know if I would go as far to say, like one of our callers in the last voicemail, saying that he's like the junior Dwight Howard. Like, you have to do a lot to ruin a lot of different teams to become the Dwight Howard.
Okay, back-to-back teams, locker room cancer. Like, he's getting
there. I know,
there.
But Dwight Howard, and that's true. Like, you could make the comparisons of, like, remember when Dwight Howard just came into the league and people were in love with Dwight Howard and he was this budding superstar and doing the Superman thing in Orlando. And people got kind of sick of it. Dwight Howard became the star. Went to L.A., people got sick of him there. People got sick of him with the Rockets. People got sick of him in Atlanta, in Charlotte. Like, this is a common theme here that we're talking about. So I don't know if I would go as far as calling him, like, Dwight Howard Jr. And that's not the first time I've heard that in the last couple of weeks either. But I don't know if I'd go that far. But, yeah, it is a little bit of a testament to what Jimmy Butler is right now. You know, saying that I'm not showing up to training camp. I demand a trade. I demand to go to one of these teams. Like, look, a lot of guys do that around the league, sure. But to not show up to training camp, to kind of dissolve your relationship with Karl Anthony Towns, your relationship with Andrew Wiggins, with Tom Thibodeau, it's just not a good look, especially piling on to, like you had said, what had happened in his last year in Chicago with Dwayne Wade and with Rajon Rondo and the locker room split here. And I don't know if that's something that's widely known or if that's just something that's kind of forgotten or what the case may be with people nationally looking at what the Bulls did with Butler here. And then on top of that, adding into the Timberwolves situation. But yeah, like, people can change, man. And that's you can appreciate what the guy was when he was here, what Jimmy was to the Bulls. And he meant a ton to this city. But at the same time, people can change. And you're seeing that change. Not only in the last year that he was with the Bulls, but also the year he's been with the Timberwolves. And now this has turned into a circus for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a bit of a stretch to make a comparison about, like, is he the next Dwight Howard as far as locker room cancers go? Jimmy's only got two on his resume for being a locker room cancer. And he's got a ways to go before he equals that of Dwight Howard. But I think... I'll be really disappointed if we don't get one of those classic moments where, remember back when Dwight was trying to force his way out of Orlando and Stan Van Gundy was doing a little Q&A with the media at a practice or a shoot around or whatever and talking about the situation. And then Dwight Howard awkwardly came and, like, put his arm around Stan Van and, like, tried to be all buddy-buddy with him when they were talking about the horrible tension between the two. And it was just deliciously awkward. I hope we get one of those moments between Jimmy and Tibbs before they part ways. We probably won't, because it sounds like Jimmy's not even going to show up at any point. He was excused from their media day activities. It sounds like he's not going to show up to training camp. And Jimmy has, you know, according to recent reports, gone to talk to Glenn Taylor, owner, specifically above Tibbs' head to make sure, hey, I just want to confirm that these trade talks are still ongoing and moving along in a forward, you know, progressive motion, because I don't want to be here. So we probably won't get any more Tibbs-Jimmy interactions, which is a shame, because it would be really funny to see that kind of same thing that played out with Stan Van and Dwight Howard.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but we come back talking a little bit about Media Day, giving you guys part two of our conversation from Media Day, following up on Jabari Parker and Wendell Carter Jr. Hit us up 331-979-1369. Text messages, voicemails there. Hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Stay right with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a voicemail or a text message. Hit us up there, Facebook as well, and make sure you're subscribed to the show. So we got one more voicemail before we hit the part two of our Bulls Media Day conversation, and that'll be about Wendell Carter Jr. and Jabari Parker. But wanted to get to this voicemail. This one comes from our friend Danny Lee.
Hey, guys. This is Danny V calling in. Jordan, you made an amazing point in saying teams that are in the bottom third in defensive rating don't make the playoffs or have 40 wins often. However, one thing I noticed is most of those teams that you said, at least within the past 3 to 4 years, were 7-8 seeds, which is what some fans, including myself, think we are more than eligible for. Those guys should know they aren't winning games without better D. Zach LaVine has heard the critics chirp his defense loud and clear. He knows what he has to. He knows he has to lock in on that side of the ball, or he won't be this great player he keeps saying he desires to become. I do truly believe in his work ethic, and let's not forget, he has the athleticism to keep up with the elite guards, and he can't get caught ball watching like he did oh so many times last year. Lowry's only going to get better at defense in year two, bulking up, obviously. Having what we would hope is a full season with a full season of Chris Dunn is surely going to raise that defensive rating. All this, and we add two very capable defenders, one being a good rim protector with the ability to switch, which in this era is the most important trait to have in defenders. These are just some of the reasons for improved defense why I believe we are getting 40 wins and a shot at possibly 7 or 8. We haven't even touched on offense, but just defense alone, those are the reasons why I believe that we will improve to 40 wins. Have a good one, guys. Love the show.
All right, thanks for the call, Danny. Appreciate you listening. And going off the defense, Matt, this is a conversation I had on one of our solo shows last week that I did, just talking about defensive rating, obviously only one metric to kind of evaluate the Bulls and evaluate teams in general and team defense in general. I just used this because I was curious. You know, we talked a lot about how the defense is going to be bad and how the offense might be really good this year. And is there a situation, is there scenarios in the past where teams have made the playoffs with a bottom third defensive rated team but also made the playoffs with a really good defense? Has that happened before? And I laid out the scenarios for everybody, and it doesn't look great. You look at the last 5 years, it's been okay, but over the last 10 years, only 10 out of the 160 possible playoff teams have had a defensive rating in the bottom third. So what say you? What do you think about this defense this year? Kind of what Danny's bringing up as far as counterpoints to what the defense might look like.
Yeah, I was disappointed that I was out when you had this conversation last week, and I wanted to touch on it now that I'm back. I saw that some other random Bulls podcast was giving you flack for your take and like saying like, oh, like why you got to trash this team and be so negative? And several people around Bulls Twitter came to your defense, were like, there's a difference between trashing a team and just highlighting statistical points of argument and bringing evidence to support your claim that teams that are bad defensively don't really make the playoffs all that often. I was very amused by that. Look, you know, as I've talked at length on this show over the offseason with LaVine being re-signed and then Jabari coming into the fold about my worries for this team defensively. And guess what? The Bulls ranked 28th in defensive efficiency last season, and I don't see that improving all that much. I mean, yeah, we might have a fully healthy Chris Dunn this season, as opposed to the weird injuries that chopped up his season last year. And Wendell Carter Jr., depending on how much run he gets as a rookie, might help improve this defense a little bit with rim protection. Maybe we'll see Markkanen do a little bit more with his rim protection. He was kind of a non-existent shot blocker last year. We'll see how much run Chandler Hutchison gets, because people keep talking about him being a versatile defensive player. I still think when you look across the board at this roster, they are going to be bad again defensively. And that is a big part of why I don't think they will be a playoff team. This Bulls team might be capable of putting up 100 to 110 points a night with all the offensive weapons they have, but can they stop anybody? And more importantly, can they get stops in crunch time of close games when it really matters? Those are the doubts that I still very much have. And I know everybody likes to talk about the offense because the NBA is trending towards the league where we want to see a lot of scoring, and it's not as much those low-scoring games in the 80s and the low 90s of previous generations. And I get that. It's the same reason the football is trending towards high scoring, and it's all about protecting the quarterback, and it's all about, you know, people loving to see big plays and lots of yards. I get it. But to me, basketball is still a two-way sport. Defense matters. And I don't see the Bulls being a good defensive team. And because of that, I don't see them being overall a complete good team. And that's why I don't think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, and it's not to say that this Bulls team can't improve on the fact that their bar is pretty much set at the lowest possible bar you could be at as far as defense goes.
Right.
But the realistic case is, like, there's no way that this team is going to be a out of the bottom third in defensive rating this year. There's just no way. No way with the guys that the Bulls have. And look, yes, you have Chris Dunn, you've got Wendell Carter Jr., maybe Chandler Hutchison, but you can't bank on two rookies being your core of your defense.
No, like you cannot.
Like, that's just not realistic. And sure, those guys can be good defenders down the line, 2, 3, 4 years down the line, but you can't expect everything from them in year one. They're still rookies. Like Chandler Hutchison, yeah, he's played 4 years in college ball, and he might be a little bit more ready than others, but still, he's a rookie. He's a rookie coming to the NBA. Same thing with Wendell Carter Jr. And look, I hope the expectations are high for both of those guys as far as what they want to do this season, and I hope they turned out to be really good defensive players almost immediately. But the expectation to say that they're going to be in a part of the factor of why the Bulls defense might be a little bit better, I think you're just banking on a little bit more of hope than actual what realistic take that you should be having as far as a Bulls fan and the defense goes. And like, let me just name the couple of teams over the last few years that have made it to a playoff seed and have had a bottom third defensive rating. So last season, it was the Timberwolves at the 8th seed. The Timberwolves had Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Jimmy Butler. They were the 8th seed. The Cavaliers were the number 4 seed. They were the second worst in defensive rating. It was them and the Suns behind the Bulls.
And guess what? Guess who played for that Cavs team? The best player in the league.
Exactly. So, and then you look at 2016-2017. It was a 41-win Trailblazers team that was the number 8 seed. They have Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and that was when Nurkic had went off and was... So they had a lot of things clicking for them in the Trailblazers, and you can't deny the fact that they've got Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And then the second team to do that was a 51-win Cavaliers team that was the number 2 seed in 16 and 17, and we all know what happened there. And then finally, just the last 3 years we'll go through. And then the 41-win Rockets team, the number 8 seed in 15-16. Look, they had James Harden averaging almost 30 points a night. So when you've got that, yeah, you can be a bad defensive team and still win games.
Basically, the trend here is that if you have one of the more elite offenses in the league and have a couple... at least one superstar or a couple of all-star caliber offensive players, you can make up for a weak defense. That's basically the trend here. Do we think that the Bulls are going to be so elite offensively that they can make up for what will almost surely be a bottom third defense again this season? To me, that is the plain and simple, cut and dry scenario that we're looking at. And all of the, look at Jabari's defense in that series against Boston. And the, we might see improvements from Zach LaVine, and he's a decent on-ball defender. And all these optimists trying to make arguments that are just based on little more than hopes and a couple of random instances. I'm sorry. But if I were faced to put a wager on this, I'm going to go with the overarching trends. And I'm going to go with the large majority of evidence that says the Bulls will be, once again, a bad defensive team, as opposed to putting my, putting stake on, I'm hoping that they're going to get better when there's little evidence to show that they will. I mean, to me, it's not insulting the team. It's not insulting to the roster as a whole or any individuals to just look at the facts and say, the Bulls are going to be really bad defensively again. That's just where we are.
Yeah, and it's realistic. Like, I came into this point trying to find out if there is a way that the Bulls can squeeze themselves in, if it's more realistic than what we were asking of. And look, I said it again, and I will say it a million times. This is just one way to look at it. And I get that you can make an point for the opposite ends and where they might end up at the offensive side of the ball. That's fine. But looking at the defensive side of the ball and what the Bulls have and what they're matched up against in the East this year, like, your expectations should be mild. And that's why I'm saying, like, having expectations of 40-plus wins plus making a playoff seed, like, it's fucking damn hard to make the playoffs, and it's damn hard to win 40 games. The Bulls barely won 40 games with Jimmy Butler here, and the Bulls had a top 15 player, and they barely won 40 games. So that's the bar, is like, just be realistic with yourself about where you have your expectations for this season. And yes, of course, Matt and I both want the Bulls to make the playoffs and be good at some point. But what's advantageous for this team and what's realistic for this team? So two different things. And I think you're just going to set yourself up for disappointment and anger at the end of the season if you think that this team should be 40-plus wins and this team should be a no-doubt must-bet 8 seed or better in the Eastern Conference. I think you're banking on a lot of these guys to be better than they actually are in year two or year three of their development, and especially banking on two rookies to be a core part of your defense. That's a whole lot of ifs, and that's a tall order to ask of these guys, especially in just year two of the rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, you look at last year, 110 points per game allowed, 102.9 points for the Bulls per game. Do you see that trending and shifting in a significant way where, okay, maybe the Bulls, if everything gels offensively, can be a team that averages more than 103 points per game? But I don't see that 110 going down. I don't see it going down enough so and coming close to the points scored per game that it makes the Bulls a legitimately, you know, playoff destined team. I just don't see enough evidence. I see some evidence in the fact that maybe if everything offensively goes well, they can average more than 103, which, by the way, last year was 26th in the league. That can improve, but I'm sorry, I don't see those defensive stops increasing. I don't see the points per game allowed going down. I think it'll stay where it is. Maybe a shade on, but it's like, if all of a sudden you think, oh, like the Bulls could be a team that, you know, drastically improves, and all of a sudden they're only giving up 105, 103 points per game. I think, no, it takes a lot for that big of a shift, and I don't see that shift happening.
All right, let's get to our final conversation. Wendell Carter Jr. and Jabari Parker from Media Day. Important topics touched on from those two guys who spoke. Just kind of wrapping up Media Day as well. So you can hit us up 331-979-1369 if you want to be a part of the conversation, or tweet at us at LockedOnBulls, at Bulls_Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. Let's wrap up, though, with Jabari Parker and Wendell Carter Jr. So you wanted to mention Jabari because I told you before we started the episode, I was like, I didn't think Jabari said anything really worth mentioning. Like, he didn't say anything bad, didn't say anything good. It was just kind of like what you expected him to talk about. Anything that you grabbed from Parker.
That's my takeaway from watching Parker. And I tweeted about this yesterday as I was watching it. His podium Q&A was very brief. He gave very brief answers. And then the same went for his Q&A with Schinowski and the NBC Bulls gang. A very brief Q&A, very short answers to every question. He showed no real enthusiasm or emotion, or the fact that he just seemed completely disengaged from the entire experience. And like, this is the kid who was supposed to be so happy and excited about coming home to Chicago and putting on a Bulls uniform, which is, you know, been his lifelong dream since he was a kid, and, you know, has all this to prove and wants to prove himself as a guy who's earning $20 million this season. I was expecting a revved up and excited and animated Jabari Parker, and we got nothing. Empty airspace. And look, I know that I have voiced my opinion on this pod several times about what I thought about the Jabari signing in the first place, and that I had my doubts about it. This isn't necessarily immediately related to that, but it is tangentially related to that in the sense that for being the next from Chicago kid to be wearing a Bulls jersey and a guy who is being brought in to expedite this rebuild that the front office is really on board for, I just got nothing from Jabari yesterday. No excitement, no commitment to what was going on, no engagement whatsoever with the Media Day process. I got zip from him, and it bothered me.
I think this is a little harsh. Like, when have we seen Jabari Parker be like a personality? Like, that's not his MO. It wasn't his MO in college. It wasn't that with the Bucks. So I wasn't shocked that he wasn't, like, it didn't come off the same way as, like, maybe Markkanen or Levine or Dunn did. Like, that's just not who Parker is. And that's fine. You don't have to be like that. I thought he made the answers clear about what he wanted to say, and maybe he was coached up a little bit more because they don't want him dropping sound bites like, I don't get paid to play defense. So maybe
maybe that was a factor. I hadn't thought of that. Maybe he was a little scared to say something stupid.
But at the same time, that's never been like his mantra. And you talk about being the Chicago kid. Maybe he was. Maybe he was nervous. Maybe that's simply what it was.
And I did say that to his credit, you know. Maybe he was just a little overwhelmed by it all. And that's possible. But still,
and he doesn't want to step on anybody's toes by saying anything stupid with, you know, being in camp now for what, 3 weeks? Like, being together as a team for like 3 weeks now.
And like, he is a Chicago kid who's very familiar with the organization. But at the same time, I guess there is an element to him being like the new kid in class, right? Like, a lot of these young guys were together last season. Dunn, Levine, Markkanen, Bobby Portis, Denzel, the whole crew. And he's the new kid. So maybe there was a little bit of that, like, feeling out the environment kind of, you know, mentality. But it, I mean, I'm just saying, look, maybe I was a little harsh with my initial comments, but I'm saying I noticed it. I think it would be hard not to notice it. He was very timid, very tight-lipped, and very short with his answers, and didn't seem to be all that excited to be there. And again, rooting for the kid. Hope he has a great season. Hope he proves me and all of the other doubters wrong. And that he has this great transformation as a guy who can effectively play the three, find him ways to play minutes at the four, and improves defensively. I hope all that happens for him. I'm rooting for the kid. But of course, he has to be aware of the daunting task and the big pressure that is on him to perform this season on this one-year deal.
Let's wrap up with Wendell Carter Jr. Two things that I took away from this. First, his mentioning of Robin Lopez immediately.
Is there one teammate that's really taken you under the wings, you know, showing you the ropes, teaching you things, or you're picking their brain, etc.?
Yeah, Robin Lopez, I mean, he's been in this league for a very long time. He knows exactly what it takes, you know, to stay in this league and be well-known in this league. So that's someone I do look for a lot of advice, and he's definitely helped me a lot.
That makes me question whether or not they're going to actually deal Robin Lopez. And like, I don't think they're going to get any value for him, so maybe it is more valuable to keep him on this roster. And the fact that Fred Hoiberg had mentioned that the center position is an open competition in training camp, now whether or not Wendell Carter Jr. plays well enough to win that spot for opening night remains to be seen. I would hope that he does. That would be awesome. And then that would make me a little bit more comfortable with keeping Robin on this team just for mentor's sake. And we talked about maybe Wendell doesn't need a mentor the way that maybe some other guys do coming into the league in their first year. But it seems like Wendell Carter Jr. has already praised Robin Lopez for the job he's done, the help that he's given him so far in the league. And I think that's going to come valuable this season. So in an ideal world, Wendell Carter Jr. beats Robin Lopez out for the starting position opening night, and then Robin plays anywhere between 10 or 15 minutes with the second unit, maybe 20 minutes with the second unit. Kind of just helps Wendell Carter along in his first year. On top of that, he said that the Bulls are making the playoffs this year. So anything about those two things?
I did notice that. Yeah, of course, a lot of these guys at Media Day yesterday spoke in varying degrees of vague optimism about what we want to come in and do and what we want to compete. Hey, well, we had Bobby on a couple weeks ago during part of our bowling event. He said he's confident the Bulls can make the playoffs this season. Dunn talked about it. Levine talked about it. Everybody seems to agree that that's the goal. Wendell probably took it the furthest by saying, like, hey, it's, you know, straight up, that's happening. We're going to make the playoffs. So love the confidence from the Rook. Of course, I'm not at all surprised to hear his glowing remarks about Robin Lopez. He's one of the most well-respected veterans across the league, one of the most well-liked veterans across the league. That's clearly why the Bulls value him so much as a leader on this young roster. And then the other thing that I took away from Wendell's comments yesterday was, you know, what have you been working on most this offseason? Of course, everybody loved seeing his shot-blocking ability in summer league, his ability to play a little bit of a two-man game with Chandler Hutchison at times, offense on the offensive end. He talked about how it's important that in today's NBA, everyone can be able to knock down shots, especially step outside and knock down shots. And, of course, we saw that as a smaller element to Wendell's game at Duke when he took, I don't know, fewer than 50 three-point attempts in a full season, but he knocked down 41% of them. We're excited about the future tandem of Markkanen and Wendell in a front court to have two guys who can stretch the floor. One of them a 7-footer, one of them 6'10 with a giant, you know, 7'5, 7'6 wingspan. To have both of them be able to knock down shots on the outside and make defenses run all over the place and cover a lot of ground and keep defenses honest. I really liked to hear, yes, we're excited to see what Wendell can do on the defensive end as a rim protector. We're excited to see what he can do developing his post game as a modern smaller five in the NBA. But I love that he said, hey, everybody in the NBA has got to be able to knock down shots, and I've been getting a lot of shots up in the gym this summer. I love to hear that.
Did you get irritated at all, just kind of wrapping this all up, did you get irritated at all that none of them made a definitive goal as a team until, like, we got to probably Wendell or even Chris Dunn? Chris Dunn was, like, the first one to really mention it, saying, obviously, as a team, we want to make the playoffs. That is one of our goals. But it took that long for one of them to actually mention it. And I think each one of them, including the front office and Fred Hoiberg, were asked, like, what are the goals for your season this year? If it's not win total, if it's not playoffs, what are the goals? And they kind of tiptoed around it. Generalizations were thrown out there, which you kind of expected.
Well,
but
yeah.
I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't really that angry. It's like, okay, these guys only been together for a few weeks. Now they kind of probably have goals internally, and they don't want to make anything like... They don't want to be making headlines, I guess, in the first day about potential playoffs or win total.
Why put yourself in that position? I'm not surprised at all that we didn't hear anything super aggressively concrete like that. I'm not surprised at all. I would have been very surprised to hear any of them say, we're making the playoffs, no doubt. I mean, Wendell said it, in, you know, it's somewhat in jest, and he didn't even really guarantee we're making the playoffs. He just said, yeah, we're going to go to the playoffs. So, no, I'm not surprised, because this is something that was distilled down through the organization from the people at the top. One of the first things that was said from VP John Paxson was, we're not going to measure this season on wins and losses. We're not going to evaluate Fred on wins and losses. We want to get competitive, but we're not going to sit here and make any guarantees or set any firm goals about whether or not we're going to be a playoff team. We want to be a competitive team, and ideally playoffs is the goal, but we're not making any guarantees, so neither should their players. That's clearly, you know, it may or may not have been addressed by the front office or Fred's staff to the players coming into media day. Here's what to say. Here's what to not say. I wouldn't be surprised if they said to them, you can be confident. You can talk about what you want to achieve as an individual this season. You can talk about what you want us to achieve as a team this season. But don't go out there and make any ridiculous, you know, false promises that we can't uphold, because it makes us look bad. It makes us all look bad, and it makes y'all look stupid.
It's true. It's good points. So I wasn't really that surprised either. It was like, okay. And none of them want to come out either, especially with relatively young team. All these guys got something to prove. You don't really want bad blood. And I thought that was, you could spin this into a positive. All of them kind of being together, you know, one unit of talking about how, yes, we all want to grow as a team. All these guys can potentially be leaders on this team. Everybody can have an impact. That's good to hear, instead of a guy going up there saying, yeah, I want to be the dominant dog. I'm going to be that guy. I want to be the guy that's taking 20, 25 shots a game, where you see other superstars kind of saying that. It's nice finally for once to hear that collectively as a group from this team. And nobody wants to piss anybody off in the first day, media day especially, by saying something, anything that might go viral. So you're right in that fact too. Anything else? Any other takeaways you've got before we sign off here?
So coming into a quick second behind Chris Dunn just calling out Joe Cowley to the entire room yesterday, which was awesome and hilarious. My second place of NBA Media Day stuff from yesterday is to former Bull Taj Gibson, who I just miss so much, and I just have always appreciated and respected that guy as a basketball player and as a professional. Of course, he was asked to give his two cents on the whole Jimmy and Tibbs saga going on, and Wolves owner Glenn Taylor getting involved, and Jimmy's trying to force his way out and force a trade. Jimmy absent for media day, and of course the question of the day was, you know, how do you deal with this distraction? Is it a distraction? And of course, the party line, and this kind of goes in line with what I was saying earlier, as far as maybe the front office and Fred coaching how they're coaching their players on what to say at media day. 9 players out of 10 would say, you know, positive spin. This is, you know, X, Y, and Z verbatim responsive. No, it's not a distraction. We're going to come in. We're going to focus on the guys who are in the building. We're going to worry about, you know, making ourselves a better basketball team, blah, 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 blah. The cookie cutter response that you would expect from 9 out of 10 guys in this league. And when asked if it was a distraction, Taj, who always has kept it real with the media, said, of course it's a distraction. It's weird. It's weird that Jimmy's not here. It's weird that we're all dealing with this right now on the cusp of training camp. Yes, it is a distraction. And I loved that because it was so in line with who we have come to know as the man and the player of Taj Gibson. Calls it like he sees it 100% of the time. I feel awful for him that he's stuck in this position between his coach that he admires and his teammate Jimmy Butler, who he admires. Two stubborn asses. And Jimmy, or and Taj, always keeping it real, always the nicest guy in the room, is stuck in the middle of it. I hate how he is stuck in the middle of it, but I had so much respect for his response, calling it so real, and calling out his teammate Jimmy Butler to a bit, saying, yes, of course this is a distraction. Credit to Taj Gibson.
Yeah, that's a good call. Taj Gibson. And I feel like he can say that to Tom. He wouldn't say anything to the media that he wouldn't say to Jimmy or Tom's face. And that's why he can keep it real with those guys. He's got that special relationship that you don't find that much in the NBA with guys the way Jimmy, Taj, and Tom have all been kind of collectively together throughout their careers. The last point, though, I have to get to on a little bit of a lighter note. How about Kawhi Leonard, man? Explain yourself, introduce yourself a little bit to us here in Toronto.
That laugh.
That was real weird. Real weird. And I feel bad, man. Now he's going to just get killed for it. It's already kind of piling on to the weirdness that happened with him out of San Antonio. Like, it's just weird. Like,
but, okay, in Kawhi's defense, that was a ridiculous question.
It was
so vague. It was like, hey, tell us about yourself. It's like, I mean, what is this? Is this like an icebreaker situation at like a company retreat? Is this a job interview? What's going on here? You know me. I'm Kawhi freaking Leonard.
I'm a fun guy. Obviously, I love the game of basketball. I mean, it's just more question you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at. Like.
This is like when you're going through fraternity or sorority rush. So tell me about yourself. Tell me your name. Where are you from? Yeah. What's your major? Like,
after this, we're going to do some trust falls.
I thought that was funny, though. That laugh, man. That is just, that's the first meme of the NBA season, right? Like, it has to be. All I can say, though, is that Toronto team is going to be good, man. Like, I think they're one of my favorites this year. Like, between him and young OG Anunoby and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah. And, like, dude, they managed to keep all the important pieces of their bench, which was probably the best bench in the league last season. And, as you mentioned, you know, Anunoby still, like, assuming a healthy Kawhi, swap a healthy Kawhi for a DeRozan, who just did nothing for them in the playoffs last year, always caved to the big moments, still got Kyle Lowry hanging out. Like, yeah, people keep talking about Boston and people keep talking about Philly. I'm pegging Toronto right now as, if not the one seed, definitely the two.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Jordan Z. Malley. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.